Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about parenting with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here is where we explore the joys and griefs, the risks and rewards of being a parent. I'm Stephen Amaya. This episode is a little different than the others, and it sent me on a quest. I knew I wanted to have a conversation with this person. I was hesitant at first, but eventually I mustered the courage, went out into the worldly world, and met Father William Orruco, the priest from St. Mary Star of the Sea Catholic Church in Astoria. I persuaded him to come into my studio for a chat, all the while feeling strangely tentative about having a conversation with a priest. My childhood Catholicism was weak, but adhesive, in a nostalgic kind of way, days of the Latin Mass and like that. I found Father Orruco to be sweet and kind, and once I knew the nuances of his speech, we were off and running.
My name's Father William Dixon Orruco. I am 57 years old now. I just celebrated my birthday April 4th.
Wow.
I came from Kenya, that is in East Africa, and on the western side of Kenya.
How many were in your family, your immediate family?
We were seven, three boys, four girls.
Yeah. We talked briefly yesterday, and you talked about father hunger, father wounds.
Of course, I would say in all cultures, even Western culture, just a terminology, but now the way people would express it, basically father hunger or father wound is just the absence of a father in the growth or in the life of a child, just the absence. Not only absent, but emotionally not there, or indifference, not playing the rightful role in the growth of a child. So anything affecting the child, like what you can say from birth, is already stigma in a person, any child, whether it's a girl, a boy, plus animals. It happens with animals. It's like a trauma. It is there, but most of the time, all of us, there are things which we don't know why we behave the way we behave, because we cannot name it. You cannot name it. You are not aware of it, but you only feel you are restless. You feel something, you are longing for something. They call it macho. That's why in all, let me say, African culture or community cultures, the raising a child is a big task. It's a big task. But these two people, the father and the mother, they play a role here. And so they are like a cornerstone with all their weaknesses. But the village come in, the relatives. So that's why it takes the whole village. But the immediate people, when this child is born, is from this family, the nuclear family. So whatever happened on the way, or even death or what, it's already a scar. And it will go, there's what we call, rituals. Every stage of a child is born is a ritual. There are rituals. And these rituals, it happens even today in the hospitals, only that it's just modern way of doing things. But the way you watch the kid. The key thing for a father figure, class also the girls, will be, remember, the father figure is not only for a boy, also for a girl, for a daughter. But the father, the boy, is key because of who is expected, what is expected of this boy to be, what is it to turn out. The boy is like what you call the shadow of his father.
Wow.
You have to come, you are a shadow, you are a hair. So if you are a hair with H, not... but the final, if all the cultures, mostly in Africa, you might have heard this. The final, every stage goes by the age, and then the modern time, what you can call now a child is turning to adolescence and puberty time, because there's growth and development, okay? In like my culture, there's what we call initiation. That is the last stage. Initiation. Every culture has got this. Initiation is where now a child or a girl now is now, because...
When in the Catholic world, is that...
You can now call it in sacramental. Now a child, the kid now start, let's say, like religious classes, preparing for baptism, confession.
Yeah.
So that were their stages. And then baptism can be baptized as infant. But when the child now, baptism is one way, it's another ritual. It's really a ritual. It's a tradition. It's a mark. A child is marked by this. He does not know, she does not know anything. But the parents already playing a role there. The priest or the pastor is a figure there, and that represents the God as the Father.
I see.
And then Jesus as the Son, the Holy Spirit. Now, when you baptize a child, who gives the birth? Now, here is where you have the sacramental. Now, the church becomes the mother. The church is the mother, because the church is now you have, when you baptism. Whether it's an adult or infant, the mother church is giving birth to a newborn. Not by natural, but now by spiritual. So then they are birthed. So these are rituals, anointing, the word, the words, the formulas. Somebody comes in to be like what we can call in the Catholic Church a godparent.
Yeah.
So anyway, initiation is a key thing in most of the cultures, and they take it seriously. Initiation, now the child is no normal child, like a young boy. Usually when they finish elementary school, that's around maybe 12, 14, they go through a traditional, depending from any tribe, very vigorous. They are secluded from anybody. They are all boys put somewhere, isolated. They are taught about the tribe, the culture, the secrets. They cannot tell the secrets, how to, when about their behavior with the girls, their behavior when they will marry, where how they will be a husband, how they will protect the community, how they will be like assurance and affirmation. Those terms now come there, their role. The boys, the girls will go their own way, also be being trained how to be a woman, to be a girl, when you are married, how you behave to your husband, to the community, to the relatives, to everybody in the community.
Are there consequences for?
Oh yeah.
What are those consequences?
Depend with what you. If you cannot break the taboo.
Okay.
You cannot break the secrets. There are some secrets which you cannot tell.
I know. Well, I find this fascinating because, you know, there is an element of secrecy in cultures, you know, about especially long entrenched ones, you know. Yes.
Let me give you another example. So let's say most of the tribes in Africa, circumcision of a male child, because that's now a mark where he's now becoming out of childhood
to
what you can call a young adult. A boy cannot start sleeping in mom's what? They become now like defend like lion. Now they are to be lion. They can go to war. They can fight. They can defend. Now they want to become like the man. Now that's where now their man is. Masculinity comes. They can be trusted with some tasks, some activities. They now be a boy. Now behave like with his masculinity. Now like a man, but he's still young. He's still under the. But then the girls will. That's the girls when they are developing. Also the adolescent time. So their bodies are already developing. Features are coming out. They are still young. When they go to high school, nobody will abuse them as their mommy's child. Because that term makes, again, which is true, when they call them, you know what we call bullying, they feel that, oh, I'm not a man enough.
How long have you been a priest?
Since 1999.
Okay.
August 13, 1999. Many years.
I hope you're enjoying this edition of Father Figures right here on KMUN 91.9 FM in Astoria, Oregon, and streaming on the web at KMUN.org. Enjoy the show. Now, did you spend your time as a priest in Africa much, or were you...
Yeah, first of all, I'm a Catholic priest, a religious missionary.
Okay.
So missionary means you can be sent anywhere in the world, to people, to cultures, and you have to learn people's culture, you live with them. So today I'm here, another time you can be sent back to Africa, India, wherever.
Wow.
After being ordained, I worked in Kenya for 4 years, and I was sent to northern part of Kenya, what we call semi-arid, semi-desert, and it was among nomadic people, but also town kind of. So then you had Muslim boys, Muslim people, Christians, and then traditional religious traditions. But I worked among the nomads. Nomads are those tribes which keep the cows, animals. They are very rooted into their traditions completely. But then they would move if they have a lot of cows and goats, a lot. But they live in houses, just manyatas, not permanent.
Mm.
But they would move to look for, searching for water, pastures.
Yeah, places for the animals to eat. Yeah.
So I worked there for a short time, and then I was the bishop by that time, he was an Italian. One day came and visited me, and then brought me to the cathedral, now like a town. And I was still young. I was scared. I don't like responsibilities. That was my weakness. I think I got it from my dad.
Mm.
It's a wound also.
Mm.
So he asked me to start a school, high school, and a seminary.
So you had to start it yourself?
He asked me and I said no, because that's always my instinct. Because I don't like
that. Yeah, the shyness.
He told me, okay, you will not be the one in charge, just help us. Little did I know that he would eat me. So I worked in there as a rector. I built a seminary. Not that I had money, but he was Italian, so he was bringing money.
Yeah.
So I started coming up with the idea, the motto, the uniform, the disciplinary rules, how you to recruiting teacher. It was my first time. I was never trained to be a teacher. Little did I knew when I'm a priest, you go to work in a parish, that's all. Anyway, so I worked there 4 years. And then after the fourth year, I got a letter that you have been transferred to the U.S. And by the way, some of those, my first pioneers, some of them are priests.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some are teachers, some are lawyers. So, you talk about the father figure. If you don't have anything you can bend to, you cannot transmit you can only give what you have. You can only give people what you have. If you don't have, there's nothing. And here were the boys from all over the country, Muslims and all that, coming from different background. Some were orphans, boys. Some are growing. Some were from poor families. Here I was. And I tell you, I had to learn. That time I didn't know the issue of father figure, but I knew a family. Some were being raised by single mothers, some were, grandparents. And so you are chasing a kid. The school was only for boys, and the seminary for boys who want to become priests later on. And you have also the religion, Muslims, Christians, Catholics, protest, I mean, Methodist, and you want to start, and then academic.
Okay.
So it was, you learn through it, and then you have to become a figure, a father figure, tender, but sometimes you are very strict, and then sometimes you are tender, and I came to know about so many things.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
It is one of my, I had no idea, I was never trained, never asked. So what did I use? Looked at the way our parish priests, when we were little, altar servers, little of my family, and then I also went to seminary high school. So the uniform I chose, the motto was from my school. So kids gave me a nickname, these boys, which I did not know. I came to know later. They called me Rex.
Rex?
Yes. Rex was, I came to, the, so when they knew I'm not around, they said, Rex. That means he's around. And when I was away, they only, if they see I'm coming, they say, Rex. So Rex was a dog, a detective dog.
Oh.
In England, and it was fun. And then sometime I was very strict. Then you dismiss them. The parent came and literally all the women told me, "Where do you want me to take this child? This is your child." I said, "Me? Yes." Say, "I'm not going to take him. This is your child." And so you start learning. And they said, "Do whatever you want to do with him, cane him or what." I'm not taking this is yours. Wow. And they're in office, and they are very, very firm. I'm not taking him, this is your child. Wow. It was the first time I said, I didn't marry, I didn't give, no, this is your child, I'm not taking, not only one parent, over and over. See, so you have sometimes disciplinary issues. You have teachers who come to report you, because I was a principal and I'm a rector, but they knew, when they gave me that, they knew I was very compassionate. They knew I'm a priest. These are boys, you know, they are growing. And so you are one part, you are not just a manager, you are a priest. They call you a father, but also you are a mentor. So the father figure come in, but indirectly. For them, they don't know. But they see you as somebody who can just say, because you are a priest, you cannot punish. But you want also to punish. Because if they didn't pay the school fees, you chase them away. Their parents don't have money. They come and tell you, "I'm not taking." Mm-hmm. And the kid will tell you, "Better spank me, don't send me home." Why? I don't have dad.
That's a wound. Were there any political forces at odds with the Catholic Church? Is in Africa, I'm speaking about.
You would say that all religion, whether it is Catholic, Christianity, or Muslim, or Islam, or what, whether it is a big or small, they played a big role in a country, because they provide things which the governments cannot provide, less like health, hospitals, reaching out to the needy, education, all. Churches, Catholic has got, I would say in Kenya, but maybe other countries, where the Christians are dominant, you will find more, they do a lot, where the Islam or other religions do, because they provide education. You know, missionaries, when they went to those places, they started building schools. The churches, yes, religion, they were teaching religion, faith, but also there's the needs of the human person or people. Schools, they built schools, yeah. They built hospitals, they made sure that they, nobody was left behind, even if children like deaf children, because that was another thing for parents, they did not know. I mean, so some, they built deaf schools. They built blind schools. Those who are handicapped, then they built those kind of things. So, and then they provided water, all this. So it was things which the government could not. And I would say up to today, they educated children, the poor children from poor countries. So if you go to most of the countries, like Africa or anywhere in the world, you'll find the church went to the peripheries of the where people were poor or what, to provide things which people would not, you know. So And I would say up to today, the churches play a big role. So they say in the Catholic Church, it is said that the church is the moral conscience of the society. So if the political class or the government are not doing the right thing, the church has to speak out with due respect. It has to speak out to be advocate. They cannot be silenced if the rights of the people or people cannot access the basic rights, food, education, something like that.
With the immigration and deportations that are occurring, I imagine there's a lot of apprehension in your congregation about, because many of them are Hispanic people.
In our church?
Yeah, in your church.
It's a growing population, but not, I would not say that they are majority now. We still have the English-speaking people are still majority, but it's a growing, which you have here them in Astoria, then you may have some in Seaside, Rockaway, Tillamook, all the way.
Now you're talking about churches.
Yeah.
Catholic churches.
Seaside we have.
Yes.
But population of the migrants, it goes beyond the church.
Yeah.
Some also belong to other denominations, other churches. But in mine, here, St. Mary, it's a growing population, but I would not say they are majority.
Oh,
yet.
Okay. Yeah. Have you noticed any apprehension among the congregation?
We have not had any incident so far, either directly or indirectly. We have never had any case or reported to us, or maybe one family or an individual being a victim of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we have not had any. I would say generally, some have been very fearful, fear, which is a natural thing to fear for the unknown, and being scared, and some children, also kids, being worried, but silently,
you know,
there's some things we are silently,
yeah.
And when you talk of, you know, father figure, that's where, because actually, that's where a threat for father figure come in. Because not by design, but external force. So the kids are already fearing if their dad leaves, just in case. I'm not saying of any case, but just in case. How are we going to survive? So you see, already children, those things, they will live with kids. And I would not say that only maybe for the migrants. It's just any human, any child, whether it is what. It's like when a dad loses a job or you don't have a job. Everybody is concerned, even children. They are just, they may not say it, but they are already worried about their future, about will they be like other kids? Will they go to school? Will I drive? So they may not ask, but already there. But they hide them, and it is already worrying them. So how do we know this? When you are in a church or in the school, children start being aloof. They start withdrawing. In the school, whether public school or private, you see this kid, they are aloof. You see these people are just coiled. They are quiet. They are cool. So what's going on here? It is what we call unspoken truth or something, because they don't know how to articulate it. And I'm not saying that we are seeing that, but that's generally. So because you talk of mother and mother figure, father figure, there's always a real, you know, you and I, we are talking about family, we are talking about parents. And so this dad, whatever the case, or the mother. So if something out there, whatever it is, it's already like a threat to what? Survival. So this kid, even when it come, cannot talk. You give homework, they don't. And the other kids, when they see them now drawing, they become weak, vulnerable. Some kids now start calling them names. Now they are now victims for being bullying because other kids want them to cheer up, but they don't know. And then they start them calling them names to see how they are reacting. Now, this, if they are boys, then that's where the father hunger and the father wound starts. Not, you know, and they will carry it long. They don't know how to act.
Yeah.
Trust me. Trust me.
I would love it, absolutely love it, if you got in touch with me, either through email or a note or a call through the station. Especially if you have comments or suggestions about this show or about any of the episodes which came before. If you've got a father in mind, please check out the list on the podcast page. By all means, contact me. That's at radiorancho@gmail.com. That's RadioRanchero. @gmail.com. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for the music and CC Blanco for production assistance. And of course, thanks again to Father William Aruco for his graciousness, openness, and respect for those whose faith may differ from his own. With that, I think it's time to close this episode of Father Figures. I think we'll go out on a wing and a prayer in Swahili.
La Baba, la Mwana, na la Roho Mtakatifu. Amina. Bwana utuhurumie, Bwana utuhurumie. Kristu utuhurumie, Kristu utuhurumie. Bwana utuhurumie, Bwana utuhurumie. Baba yetu uliye mbinguni, jina lako litukuzwe, ufalme wako ufike, utakalo lifanyike duniani kama mbinguni. Utupe leo mkate wetu wa kila siku, utusamehe dhambi zetu na utuonyeshe rehema yako kila wakati, milele na milele. Amina. Kwa jina la Baba na la Mwana na la Roho Mtakatifu. Amina. Asanteni sana. Mungu akubariki nyinyi wote. Bwana utuhurumie, Bwana utuhurumie. Kristu utuhurumie, Kristu utuhurumie. Bwana utuhurumie, Bwana utuhurumie. Baba yetu uliye mbinguni, jina lako litukuzwe, ufalme wako ufike, utakalo lifanyike duniani kama mbinguni. Utupe leo mkate wetu wa kila siku, utusamehe dhambi zetu na utuonyeshe rehema yako kila wakati, milele na milele. Amina. Kwa jina la Baba na la Mwana na la Roho Mtakatifu. Amina. Asanteni sana. Mungu akubariki nyinyi wote. Bwana utuhurumie, Bwana utuhurumie. Kristu utuhurumie.